On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, doping cops are taking aim at amateur athletes, how much the ITU spent on drug testing, and yes, a Lance Armstrong discussion. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. People, are you ready? Hey, welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast. Alongside Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson, episode 151. And I posted this, I don't know how long ago. There was a, Lance Armstrong seems to be making the rounds again in public. He was on a podcast in mid-December with Joe Rogan, the Joe Rogan Experience.
Right.
Which, Joe Rogan's a pretty smart guy. I'm surprised how smart he is for being a musclehead and being a comic, a comedian. Now he commentaries the UFC fights.
Right.
He's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
He's worldly.
And what was he? He was on Fear Factor, right?
Yeah. And now he shaved his head. He's got all bulked up. He's all tatted up, and he's taken some PEDs. I don't know if he's admitted to it, but it's no doubt that the guy's he wrote it up at some point.
We are just assuming that. We are not accusing him of that.
Hey, I respect the hell out of him. I don't care.
Okay, I like how honest he, I mean, how direct he is. It doesn't mean that I necessarily agree with it, but yeah, he's big into the UFC stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And man.
Yeah.
He makes the call on the majority of the big events.
Sure he does. And so he had Lance Armstrong on as a guest. It was like an hour and 50 minutes. Lance did take a pee break, but it was a full hour and 50 minutes on, I think it was episode 737, whatever it was. It's on video, but it's also on iTunes. So I watched all of that. And I'm wondering, why are you doing this, Lance? Why are you back in this, you know, the public spotlight? Why are you here? Nothing against him. I like Lance. So I it's like, well, but you know, what's the topic? Are you trying to race again? Where's your lawsuit stand? So in that episode, he talks about, you know, he's got one big lawsuit left. He's downsized his life financially, even though he still gets paid for public appearances and has some investments. He talks about how he's trying to protect his kids, or at least educating his kids on what he's done and how to combat that in schools, and how he's been trying to protect them, and how many people knew about when he started doping back in 95 when he started.
Right.
And then I don't know if you saw the thing about, is it Carmichael was in the news recently?
I think I might have posted something on that.
But maybe it was you. Yeah, you posted that end of December.
Yeah, well, and then there's also a thing on that dialogue that I put about that.
Right.
Basically, it had to do with, anyway, I won't talk about that.
So, I don't know. So, listen to that episode, if you can, with Joe Rogan and Lance Armstrong. But this brings up today's kind of main topic, and that has to do with doping cops, I guess, the taking aim at the amateur athletes. And this wasn't that long ago where an 18-year-old cyclist was popped.
Well, actually, it's kind of an interesting article, and again, be honest with you, that's what caught my just made me go, oh no, this is my, I don't want to say biggest fear, but it's not my biggest fear, but it's a huge concern, because as we look at doping in these other areas,
the time trial champion, the junior, he was the one who got hit, 18-year-old cyclist, right?
Yeah, for EPO. And he's a UK. I mean, I hate even, he's 18, so Gabriel Evans is his name. He was the junior time trial champion, I believe, in the UK. Basically admitted to using EPO, and essentially he didn't just come forward and go, I need to get this off my chest. He was traveling, I believe, if I remember the article correctly, he was traveling, and one of his teammates' dad had seen the vial and basically called him out on it and said, you know, I'm going to turn you in type thing. And so that might have still happened, but he kind of came clean. In the article, basically, he goes through and just says all the negative impacts of it, about how this has ruined his career and how he regrets it and he's let everybody down. I mean, just basically everything, you know, that we could hypothesize being an issue of doping. And now you have this 18-year-old. Now, the bigger picture of it is going backwards and going, okay, now we got 18-year-olds doping themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's like, whoa, hold on. This is only a, you know, a NFL issue, these, you know, post-college and maybe some crazy college people. No, this has been my fear all along, that it's a trickle down to be a professional, whatever athlete, you know, this is what you got to do. So the college or the, you know, post-high school kids, you know, are going, okay, well, if I'm going to make that level, I need to do this too. And now you're going into high school, and the high school are looking at the college saying, well, in order for me to play in college or be competitive at the next level, you know, beyond 17, 18 years old, I got to do this. So we're seeing it go down, down, down. Not that it hasn't happened. I mean, we all know of issues in high school of steroids, but I'm just talking about in general of creating not the exception, but almost like, oh yeah, I knew tons of people that were doing EPO when they were in high school. Oh, wow. Okay. You know,
these aren't drugs that should be easy to be found. I mean, steroids, I know growing up in my era, where right. your era, the late 80s, early 90s, you know, they had the muscle heads in the gyms that had them. Or I heard whispers of that in high school where certain athletes that would, you know, preparing for college, they would take something. Right. But it seems like that's a little more accessible as opposed to, I don't even know EPO. I'm just still on the surface of all these different endurance-enhancing drugs.
Well, I think it goes bottom line down to saying, if it's important to you, you'll find a way. You know, back to, I think we even said that, you know.
Without showing up on the radar, though? If this 18-year-old kid's asking around for EPO, someone's going to say, hey, Evans was talking about, you don't want that out.
Well, no. So where is he getting it? I mean, supposedly, whenever I hear, it's like, you know, oh, it's so easy to get. All you have to do, and there's online places and so forth that you can potentially get it. EPO is a little different. I thought you had to have a prescription, but then again, you need a prescription for everything, but
people are still getting it, right?
You somehow can get it. If it's important to you, you find out. Is it cheap? No, I don't think it's cheap. But
so there you go. Who can afford this stuff?
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about a teenager.
Cyclist.
Who's a cyclist. Now the thing which I think might be easier for a teenager is the gains.
Right.
He's a teenager. He's probably, you know, his levels of, you know, his hormones are at a high level. You're going to be doing well as a teenager, or you're getting your growth spurts or testosterone, whatever it may be. He's 18. If he's still accelerating in his results and his speed, it shouldn't pop up in the radar, would it?
It'd be hard to say. Well, yeah, I don't think. And are they drug testing, you know,
why would they?
Juniors? I mean, well, yeah. And I mean, it's not to say we'd be ignorant to say, oh, it's not a problem. It probably is, and it was obviously in what you referenced earlier with, matter of fact, guys that I raced with on the junior national team that were being doped unknowingly.
Really?
That sounds crazy, duped unknowingly, but literally doped. Yeah, oh yeah, Greg Strock. Matter of fact, it might be referenced in some article that I recently posted, but basically in 2006, I believe the case came to a close. And they undisclosed amount settled. Some believe it's like a quarter mil. And the national junior national team coach at the time, which I believe was Chris Carmichael, which is weird, is connected to Lance.
Yeah.
Basically settled out of court, believed to have paid like $25,000.
That's criminal drug.
Are you kidding me? He was matter of fact, I don't want to say to his credit, because it's really not, but I mean, strategically, it was probably one of the smartest things he did, is to get himself out of that lawsuit saying, here, I'm going to give you $25,000, just I'm no longer a part of this, correct? Okay. Yeah, you're no longer part of it. We're really after the USA Cycling. Mm. You know, good. Whew. You know, and I'm out of it. You can't name me anymore. I'm done. You know, so it cost him, whether it was $25,000, $50,000, because it was on with two people bringing it to the front. The other guy was, I forget who, but Greg Strock.
Yep, Greg
Strock. And he had, but the way it came out with Greg Strock is I believe that he had some medical issues that they're like, no, this is really weird. The only way, and eventually after years of testing, I believe you can read the article, they basically said the only way, you know, the only other way you could get this is if you were, you know, taking some one of these drugs. And he's like, wait a minute, you know, and then all of a sudden it came to me. So,
well, this article Roger's referencing, cyclingweekly.co.uk, and then just look in there for, you know, this guy's Gabriel Evans admits EPO use. This is from probably December.
Early December.
Okay.
I mean, when it came out, I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, he's out of the UK, and unfortunately, because again, the UK has been doing quite well in you know, triathlon and on the road with Bradley Wiggins and the Sky Team. And
We've heard so much about the threat of testing age groupers in the sport of triathlon and hoping that'll be a deterrent. And then we know that the pros are being, you know, tested at midnight, early in the morning, because that's kind of what they have to go through. But now amateur athletes are getting tested. Well, okay, I should back up here. The cost to test doesn't make sense. When according to this latest thing by the Wall Street Journal, the ITU spent $250,000 on drug testing a couple years ago. $240,000.
Right. And that's up from what they originally had spent the prior. So it's not like they're just like, oh, we're just going to allocate this. They are increasing the amount. I think it was an 8% increase over the prior year.
So inside the games.biz, they're talking about this one lady here. I guess she's getting a raise?
Yeah, 30% raise.
Okay.
She's just the one of the.
So you big posted guns. This on your personal page, a personal Facebook page, about doping cops taking aim at amateur athletes. And what sparked you about this?
Be honest with you. For me, I want to get. I mean, to me, it's the. Again, using random analogies, I use a camera on my bike when I ride off the back of my saddle that just records high def and loops 4 hours of footage. I want every driver out there that's driving on the roads that I'm riding to think that every single cyclist out there has a camera on them. That's what I'd like to think. I'd like to everyone, not really, again, this is kind of just that weird thing. It's like, I would like everyone to think everyone else has a gun too. Meaning, you go pull a gun on someone, you're gonna get shot yourself. You know, it's like, everyone else has a gun, and I'm not saying, please don't open this can of worms to gun control. I'm just saying, I want there to be the fear that if you do something stupid like dope, you're gonna get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line. And so whenever I see these articles of people getting caught and upping the, you know, who they're testing, where they're testing, how often they're testing, I want it out there. I want everyone to know. I don't want people necessarily, because I don't think you're going to, just like with Lance Armstrong, you're not going to prevent doping because you catch someone. You're going to prevent doping because you know there's a ton of testing going on. So as soon as there's a ton of testing going on, it's just a numbers game. It's like, wow, they're testing half the field. I got a 50-50 chance of getting caught. Is it worth rolling the dice? Mm-hmm. Probably not. And if you look at the top whatever, and I think it's also ignorant to think that the only people that dope are the top five in each age group. I think that's silly. I mean, it exists everywhere. I mean, it exists in the middle of the pack. It exists everywhere. EPO, I don't think is an accidental. Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know I was taking EPO. I think, you know, people that believe that, you know, I have a low testosterone count, so I have a testosterone. And they talk about, I didn't know I needed a therapeutic use exemption, a TUE. And it's like, you don't get one of those for low, you know, testosterone levels. You know, they don't, there's none given for that. So don't think that, well, I got a prescription for it. It doesn't matter. You are, you know, you don't get that. Sorry. So, and again, I don't think people that are competing at the high level, you know, whether you're, you know, world championship level or, you know, national, top national or whatever, I don't think they're that dumb. You know, like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, geez, I just came onto the sport and thought I could. I don't think that happens. I mean, you take James Burke, great example, who came onto triathlon, Ironman, does well, goes on to, you know, world championships, whatever, does well at nationals, world, whatever. Came on quick. I guarantee you within probably the first few months, he knew that, you know, using EPO is probably not okay. You know, using testosterone is probably not okay. Using these substances that are questionable and I have to buy in dark alleys, probably not okay. So, I mean, here's a guy that's new to the sport. So I guess there's, if you're taking something and you're not sure if it's legal or not, I mean, I think it's kind of on you. And if you're taking it from a company that's questionable, like they don't even control any of the substances they're putting in it, I don't know. I think that's kind of on you.
One person wrote here in your thread, because when it comes to cost, this is from Mark. He says, I would like to see what the cost is to administer one drug test. I'll only see the lump sum spent for the year or something like that. I know that I would be willing to pay more for a race if it would cost me $20 or so per race. That way more people would get tested. And you replied.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how much it costs per test, because obviously it's not just about the test. It's about validating a test, meaning we've seen things, we've seen tests, people get a pass because of the chain of command handling. I think it's not chain of command, it's chain of custody, maybe, of a sample, a specific time. Is it Brian Braun? Is he a baseball player?
I don't know. Not Brian Braun.
Braun.
There's a Braun, though, yeah, I think.
I think it's Braun. Anyway, it happened with him where he tested positive. It's not questionable. He tested positive, but how it was handled, the chain of custody, that's what it is. How it was handled, it didn't get sent off in a reasonable amount of time or whatever. So essentially, it got thrown out. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that he didn't test positive. It's how it was handled, and subsequently, he didn't. So he got off. He got a bye. And it's like his attorneys, you know, two thumbs up, good for them. Yeah. It doesn't mean he wasn't dirty.
Yeah.
But I think for me, looking at that of saying how much does it cost, you have to factor that in. They're paying for someone to come out that's certified to do it. Then they have to do it and do the test. And then, I mean, so it's not like, you know, it's not like checking the chlorine levels in your pool. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, I'll just send these back to the lab. You know, it's just like, no, it's pretty intricate. And if you're dealing with blood, not just urine sample, if you're dealing with blood, now it's a whole different, you know, category. So the ITU spending, you know, a quarter of a billion, what was it? No, $240,000, right?
Yeah.
So a quarter of $1 million on it. You know, that probably goes to show that it's not cheap. I mean, that's ITU. That's a very small part. What does WTC spend? I don't know. What type of testing do they do? I don't know. I don't know the extent of it. I know they test age groupers, but I think it's only urine. And if they're not testing blood, you know, that opens a whole door to, you know, a lot of things. Not to give anyone ideas, but I'm just like, you know, how extensive is it? You know, because again, cyclists, and I think ITU also they have the blood passport,
right?
That basically is watching their blood levels. Well, that's for blood doping and seeing if they're using, you know, blood bags and stuff like that, which is huge in cycling. So, you know, if they're not doing that, does that mean amateurs are now going to be doing injecting themselves with blood? I don't know.
We have such a transient sport as it is that there was more comments here. I think that you said that you don't think many people even care if others are using PEDs in our sport, and unaware that's even a factor, because they're in and out. They're not sophisticated to even consider that.
Right.
Not sophisticated, not dumb, but they're not their mindset.
It's on like, radar.
I'm just here to complete, participate, have a good time, check it off my list, enjoy it. Family comes out, watch me accomplish some great goals. This we're already in a niche sport as it is.
Right.
Then you have even a smaller amount that would even consider this.
Right.
So unfortunately, Marks, I like your comments, but if you were to tack on another $20 to a race entry because there's doping, I was like, wait a minute, I'm doping. What's that?
Right.
What sport am I involved in as the average age group or the person who's coming into it? There's doping involved in the sport.
Right.
What kind of? I need to pick something else.
Well, go back. Let's use a big running race in Spokane. Take Bloomsday and look at the majority of the people who participate in that race. They're not participating in that race to hopefully win their age group or win overall. I mean, there's 50, very few
people.
So
in that
take you know, let's take, you know, John Smith
that
shows up that wants to do the what we'll call it a 10K. It's actually 12, isn't it? 12K. We'll say it's a 10K that wants to hopefully finish in under 2 hours.
Okay,
that's his goal. He's going to walk it, man, and he's going to really try to heel-toe it. And you're telling him now that he's got to pay more because they want to be able to test the elite athletes on the front. And he's like, you know, it's like, hey, are you willing to pay a little more so we can test these elite athletes? You know, the guy that's pushing his kid in the double stroller.
Yeah.
Does not care.
Nope.
And that's the thing. Is like, yeah, you could tack it on, but what's that going to do? You take a sprint race that's $90 and now just turn it into $110. And would $20 from everybody in the race, how many tests is that going to get you? I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't. It's worth talking to, you know, USADA or whatever and saying, what does it cost to test athletes? I know there's a Grand Fondo in New York that netted a couple positives from, you know, some mid 50-year-olds or mid 45-year-olds or mid 40s, I guess it would be 40-year-olds, and they spend $15,000 and that buys them, I forget how many tests, it tests the top in each age group maybe, and then there's a certain amount of random ones that they didn't disclose. $15,000. I mean, what races out there can afford $15,000 for, and that's a Grand Fondo. That's just a cycling, mm-hmm. you know, and cycling races, by the way, are typically a lot cheaper than triathlons.
I like the idea of having the threat of testing, but no, I don't think, and this is kind of like with the NFL or any other high-level sport, they don't want to get caught. They don't want to find someone guilty of this because then there's the shadow of integrity on the sport. You know, think of if you think of any of the pros right now, no one wants, and I'm not going to name any names, but no one wants the top 5% of the professional athletes to get caught. That's not good for business.
Well, basically, they compare it to cycling, and they look at what it did to cycling, and you look at what it did to baseball.
Sure.
The home run, you know, you look at all that. What is it doing to those sports? Yeah, you don't want your race to be considered, oh, that's where all those drug cheats are. But at the same time, or is it that you have a hand on it? It's not your event, it's this sport. And as a representative of this sport putting on this event, we are going to net all these, you know.
You just don't want your superstar getting caught. If your superstar is the face of your sport,
right.
Think of the top 5 men in Ironman triathlon or top 5 women in Ironman triathlon.
Right.
You don't want them getting caught. Just like the same reason why Lance was able to bypass or have second opinions or second tests that were never revealed, whatever it was. You can't have him because there's too much money at stake. And it tarnishes. Look what happened to the tour as it is now. I mean,
you followed, but that, yeah, I would agree. But that had to do with the races, you know, in terms of Lance racing, drew a lot of attention to the race. Obviously, you have Lance come out of it, it creates a problem. But in triathlon, let's say Jan Frodeno gets busted, okay. He tests positive. Does that impact the participation in Ironman?
No,
it doesn't do anything because we're a participation sport.
But if you want to keep on increasing the prices to pay for the testing, they're going to, yeah. When the WTC or whoever makes the call wants to increase participation of men, women, certain age groups, and then they have to say, oh, by the way, we're going to add another $50 to your Ironman entry fee because right. we're going to be testing randomly some athletes today. What?
Yeah.
You're already getting, you want to increase my participation,
right.
then you want to add cost to it.
Right.
I'm not going to participate in your sport. Maybe that's a different thing about someone getting busted. It's the cost.
It's cost, and I don't, and again, I don't know how much it is. Again, great question. If anyone wants to, that has true data on how much it costs, I'd be curious what it costs to have 10 tests done at your race. Mm-hmm. You know, and then of course there's blood but I don't think a majority of the people care.
Here's a great comment. This is kind of a little bit long, but so stay with me. Brian wrote here in this thread. About if you're a pro and get caught cheating, not only do you get a suspension or a ban for a while, but you lose your livelihood from racing and sponsorship. A fairly big hit, I would imagine. Why not some fairly stiff fines for cheating as an amateur? A ban is semi-meaningless to a narcissistic type A person as described in the article above. However, hit them in the wallet with some big fines. WTC or whoever they are called now could use their resources or lawyers to go after people's assets if they refuse to pay their big fines. These fines could certainly offset the cost of testing. Ultimately, though, in the end, we will all pay more for a cleaner sport. You said you agree to an extent.
Yeah, I don't think triathlon is, it, you know, you ban a NFL football player. Yeah. There's a lot of them you could ban, you know, potentially, you know, but a triathlon is, and I think that's what I said, is, and I don't disagree with him. I 100% agree, but I don't think we've created a financial stability for a large group of people to truly make a living in triathlon. I don't think, and the places that people are making a living, the ITU short course racing, no one knows anything about anyway. No, I mean, we all know Ironman and, you know, whatever our local races are, but we don't know ITU racing, and ITU racing is already committing $250,000 to testing. I think those guys do get tested, and they're also governed by Olympic testing as well, because they're an Olympic event. Mm-hmm. So which I do agree with Brian. I'm like, hit them where it hurts, but
flying amateurs.
But no, I'm talking about even the pros. Oh. It's like, what impact does it have? You know, a majority, the only people that are making a living potentially are the top 10 in Kona.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest, you know, are getting by likely and have a second job anyway.
They're not making their money. Well, maybe the top 10 are making money at races, whereas the majority of them are going to be making their money elsewhere.
Right.
Whether as a coach and consulting.
Right.
Maybe sponsorship bonuses here and there. But
I guess people like Dave Scott and Mark Allen are working their butts off still, you know. Five-time Ironman world champions, you know, wrote some six-time.
Yeah.
Six?
Both of them are sixes.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
I'm thinking five, Tour de France.
Okay.
Which was multiple people until Lance came along. But yeah, they worked. You see them at all those events. They're showing up. It's not Kona. It's like, oh, we just love coming here. Well, you love coming here.
Well, they have no identity outside of
that's it.
The sport.
Walk around and, you know, or in any club that you're a part of. Oh, that's so-and-so. Someone has to tell you. Those guys still are working. It's just not, there's not a lot of money. Now, if you could find amateurs for doping, that's something, you know, it's all of a sudden it's like, or you go to jail or you spend jail time, which I guess you could if it was a banned substance or
deterrent? Banning them or fining them?
I'd say put them in jail.
No.
You have a substance that's not in your name.
I think they'd rather be fined than banned, because you fine, you pay your fine, and you can come back and race. But if you're banned, you're out of what you do. If you're that dedicated to the sport and you're taking something, I'd say ban them versus fine them.
Yeah, but that's a zero. I mean, I do always say it's kind of like the death penalty. You know, it's just like there is a chance that they're innocent, you know, and they have found that. They've killed a lot of people that actually didn't do the crime. So I have a hard time. It's like, you know, what if that was, you know, Hammer Nutrition that had poor, you know, controls on their product, and this did get in. Supposedly that happened.
Well, due process. I appreciate and respect due process.
But it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you ban them? But again, who cares? Or would you be willing to roll the dice in a sport, you know, going, all I want to do is make it to Kona. That's just my dream, to make it to Kona.
Then do 12 races in the legacy program.
Yeah, no kidding. Get jacked up on all this stuff. Make it. And then are you racing Kona, and then you test positive, and it's or whatever, or you test positive at an event, and you don't even get a race at Kona. It's like, sorry, you're using this. Okay, I'm done. I'm done with the sport anyway.
That was my final.
Yeah, I don't care. Chapter. Whatever. I'm gonna go be an endurance runner, you know, or whatever, or probably it came from that. I don't know. It's
Are we making too big of a deal about it? Does everyone care?
I think there's probably 10 people in every age group that care.
Because they don't want to get beat by someone who's enhanced.
When you're now, they're putting 40 slots at Ironman. I mean, used to be 50 slots that qualify. Now there's 40.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking it's getting thinner and thinner and thinner. I mean, it's getting harder and harder to qualify. Bottom line, you get more people participating. And rather than, you know, look at candidates first year, how many people, you know, they went 10 deep, or they had twice as many Kona slots, and now they go back to normal, and now there's fewer. I mean,
that's the business plan, though. That's the blueprint of getting a race started.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm just saying, it's just like all of a sudden, you know, people that had dreams all of a sudden go, oh, if I just were, oh my gosh, I feel bad for, you know, some of the, you know, say the 50 plus women age groups that will have one slot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one slot. Mm-hmm. What does that do? Well, it either is going to make it far more competitive, and people are going to raise the game, which will make the sport faster because everyone's vying for that one position, which I think ultimately is good for increasing speed. What if you only had one slot in every single age group? I mean, across the board at any race. I mean,
people would become desperate.
Yeah.
If that's what they really wanted to do.
Right.
Was to get there.
And so what does desperation look like?
Sure.
You have that guy, what was it, that got the Marines, the Marine Corps Marathon. What is that called? Shoot.
Where?
I don't know. I just read the article. The guy that qualified for Boston multiple times always seemed to miss a couple of the mats in every race that he does.
Really?
Yeah. They caught him, busted him, removed all his results from prior years. And it's just like in the conversation about that. I mean, it reminded me of the Whistler situation where that lady didn't have any splits.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, and again, according to this guy, then his split got picked up on the last one, which would suggest he did the last, whatever 10K in 28 minutes, which again.
I remember the picture of that lady. She's from Canada, right?
Yeah.
And her body shape and her legs, and people were saying, you really think this woman or this person, based on their what they look like, are that fit and fast of an athlete? Some bodies.
She's on. I mean, she was probably one of those that was on the bubble, you know, on the bubble of like almost making it, but not quite. And decided, hey, you know, I figure out a way to, but is that where, hey, let's not focus on drug cheats anymore. Let's just focus cheaters. On the cheaters that we thought we've,
she's clean.
We've got rid of with timing mats. Yeah. This guy, his name's Gregory Price from the 2014 and 15, Marine Corps Marathon. Essentially, he cut the course, got to Boston, and he was, the guy just ultimately cheated or somehow got his chip somewhere, gave it to, I don't know what it is, but I think this is good. I think for people to think, I mean, I've joked about that. I'm like, how could you, you know, if someone wanted to cheat in an Ironman, you know, and wasn't just by themselves, how could they do it? I mean, how could you not just stop at an aid station, hand your chiming chip to somebody, let them go to the out and back, come back, give it to you, and you continue running? I mean,
fresher
because you're fresh. Well, you had a break and, you know, and got regrouped. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's Ironman. I think it would be hard to do. But again, are you just improving time or are you taking a Kona slot? Well, in the fast age groups that are finishing, you know, sub 10, you know, 9:30s, you know, low nines, you're going to see those people. But when you get into those other age groups, the 60 plus men, women, and so forth, where you're in the mix, no one knows what's going on. People are walking and
not paying attention.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you could easily cheat and not get caught. But I think with these new timing mats is making, or not new timing mats, but with timing mats, people are starting to, and I've seen a video or cameras at turnarounds, like in Ironman, like videoing the turnaround. You know, it's like, wow, this Matt just read two people went by at the same time, and as we review it, there's only one person going by. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think it's smart to think that that doesn't happen. Would be, I think, as naive as saying, you know, why would amateurs cheat? And if you are under the idea, if you actually ask that question, it's like, why would amateurs cheat? There's no money in it. Good for you. I'm glad you think that way. But the reality is if people aren't doing Ironman and cheating in Ironman as an age grouper for money. It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with they're probably already successful in whatever they do. They can afford this sport and they want a cool little plaque to hang in their office to show all their colleagues, you know, how successful they are in other areas too. I mean, not to take anything away from Ironman world champions and age group world champions and stuff like that, but I'm just saying, you want to know why people cheat. It's not for age group or amateurs. It's not a money issue.
Mm-mm. No.
So anyway, sorry, I don't know where we got on that. I think I'd love to be, like I've said numerous times, I wish I was tested. I wish someone would test me. I think it would be cool. I'd be honored. I would totally take pictures and Facebook that.
What could you possibly learn from a one test? There's no comparison.
No, well, you're comparing if there's something in your system. If you're taking EPO, if you have some chemical in your system, your testosterone level's way too high, you have artificial something, if you're doing blood, there's all kinds of things that they could find. But that's my point, is like they would have to catch you while you were, as Tyler Hamilton said, while you're glowing, while you have something in your system. A lot of times, people don't have anything in their system. They're testing. It's like, oh, crud.
Well, they always talk about if you've done it, like anyone who has doped in the past and they've taken their 2-year
sanction, you know,
and they come back, well, they've already been at a high level. Yep. It's easier to get back to where you,
right.
It's easier to get higher.
You've moved the bar. Saying. You know, then that's the thing, is like, they might not be doping anymore, but they were doping for so long and have created a physique or a body or chemistry within your body and muscle structure and everything like that at such a high level. It's just like anything, just like a weightlifter who got all bulky and stuff. They can get back to that.
Close.
But yeah, close to it by just lifting again without doing anything artificial. So, and I think with endurance sports, I think it's potentially even more likely, since it's, well, at least that's what's being suggested. But I will also say, in cycling, there's been very few athletes that have come back from a 2-year ban. that ever matched what they did before or improved on it.
Well, meaning they can't compete at the at a high level.
Well, that's the whole point. And Contrador is, I think, the only one that came back and won a Grand Tour after he served a two-year
Part of his 2 year was retroactive, right? Like,
well, he had like a year and a half.
Okay,
because it was a tour thing. But most people, they come back and they're just, I don't want to say middle of the pack. They get a lot of attention and stuff like that. But they aren't winning the Grand Tours. They aren't a big player in the Grand Tours like they were. Mm-hmm. So, do drugs work? Yes, that's the problem.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think we're about wrapping up this.
Did we talk about Lance?
Just the beginning. The fact. I just wanted to kind of. It was just interesting that he was back in the public eye, and this interview was pretty interesting because it's pretty candid. I mean, it's a lot of time has been past 3 years, I think, since the Oprah interview in late 2012. And now he's just talking, shooting the breeze with him. And there's a lot of curse words that are mentioned. So if you are sensitive about the F word, don't watch. But it's honest. It's straightforward. It's kind of cool to see him. He was saying that there's a line between, I don't know, there's something in madness about being a competitive athlete and the line of being, you know, being mad, not like angry, but, you know, the madness of wanting to win and him. His whole time of lying, he says, you know, if you were to interview me 15 years ago, I would have lied to your face straight up over and over again. That was just the way who I was back then.
Right.
The lie got too big and it became competitive. And Lance admitted, he talks a lot of third person, which is strange. You know,
no kidding.
Yeah. What?
Really?
he was saying, crap. Now you got me out. Threw me off.
Sorry.
That, crap, it's
a good. Talks about in third person.
He talks about in third person.
Talks about the old Lance.
Oh, in that he says there's a good thing about being a competitive athlete, in which he was. It got bad when he took that competitiveness personal or outside the sport, when it was outside of the bike race.
Right.
When it was in business, it can be somewhat beneficial. But when it became personal, and then he attacked the press, and then he became more of a jerk. Because that crossed outside of the racing, and he shouldn't have done that. I didn't realize how early it started for him, 95.
Well, that's what I've heard. Kind of the common theme with most of the interviews. I haven't listened to that one, and I want to. Is that a lot of that is coming out right now of him saying, "Yeah, I was a jerk." You know, it's like, you know what, I crossed the line. You know, it's like the doping thing and everything. Yeah, that was wrong. Everyone was doing it. It's sorry. Would I do it again? Probably if I was put in that situation, because we all were. I probably would. And I appreciate that honesty. Now, but does he realize it's wrong? Does everybody realize it's wrong? Are there consequences for it? Yes, yes, and yes. I'm Mark Whitehead, who was on the Olympic track team in 84. He died, actually, I would suspect, from complications of the doping he did in the 84 Olympics. He was a track rider, and he had an interview with Bob Babbitt. I think I've said this before, but that he said, you know, Bob Babbitt asked, he's like, wow, would you do it again? Because he got really sick. He had adverse response to it. And he says, you know what? Yeah. He says, I'd do it again. I'd do it again and again. That's what you did. He says, to be competitive, everyone was doing that. It's like you had a choice to either match what everyone's doing or just get annihilated. And, you know, he's like, yeah. So to sit, I mean, again, and I think that's what Lance is, and everybody in that that's been busted. It's like, you know, well, everyone was doing it. Well, that's not an excuse. It's like, are you a professional cyclist? Have you ever been in that arena? And I'm not saying there weren't some that said, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, for you to, you know, say what you would do until you're in that situation, you have no clue what you would do.
Yeah.
No idea. Just like, you know, track runners and all that. I mean, it's just like, God, you know, for us to sit, I mean, I'm not saying it's right, and I hope that I could make the right choice. But again, put me in that situation.
He said when all the Americans went over to start racing, when they did, they never went over the intention of, let's go do this. Let's get on drugs so we can be competitive. They realized that's what was being done.
Right.
It's like, oh my gosh, we're going to get killed over here if we don't do something.
Well, and I think that was the story, is they were getting over there and just getting annihilated, annihilated. And then he finds out that everyone has these elaborate doping plans. And he's like, we need to get on the same thing. And that's his competitive win at all costs mentality. It's like, screw it. And I mean, just like, again, how many people that have these dreams that they bust their cans over and over, and it's like, you take this little red pill,
right,
and that'll get you on top of the podium. You've been second step or third step for a lot of races. This little pill, it's not, by the way, everyone else is taking it too. So that's why. Okay.
He has some good points there about in the record books where there's a line through all his wins.
Little asterisks,
But other admitted dopers who won certain jerseys are still on the list. It's kind of a jerk move to take his name off the list and keep other people's names on the list when they've admitted to what he has admitted to.
Right, exactly.
It's obvious.
And he says if someone else steps up, and I know this is in other interviews, it's like, does anybody else go, okay, Lance, he was a cheat. I'm the one that should have won the tour that year. It's like he firmly believes, you know, and again, has challenged and has asked. It's like, and I believe that most of the athletes would probably say that we're in the top 30 or whatever that would say, no, Lance won these tours.
Well, he even said it too. He said, you ask anybody back there, they all know I won.
Right.
I feel like I won, and you can ask anybody else who won those races. Right. I won those.
Doesn't
races.
Mean he's not a jerk, but he won.
Yeah.
They were all doing the same thing. He just did it better. And again, whatever. And, you know, maybe, you know, I agree. I 100% agree. It's like, then take it away from all those guys. Mm-hmm. And by the way, all these other people that have admitted doping, like Bjarne Riis, who won the tour as well, take it away from him as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but you're not going to, because he did all his doping and smiled while he did it. Lance did all his doping and frowned and grimaced and called people's names. So therefore, he doesn't get it.
He was telling Joe about how he had to, you know, how people dropped weight back then because you had to be the whole power to weight ratio. When he said this, like, oh, I know what he's talking about.
Right.
He was saying, we would ride for 6 hours and not eat. We'd go to bed hungry. We had to lose weight. That's what we did.
Yep.
It's like, how do you actually perform? I don't think that was in competition, but how do you do that in training and actually get any kind of advance in your training if they're just doing that to lose weight?
Right.
I know he had to be light, but there's got to be some diminishing returns there. If you don't eat and you don't take nutrition, you're burning, go to bed hungry.
Well, and you got to remember, they're not riding some of the time. A lot of those 6 hour rides or whatever are not high intensity. It's just, you know, they're drinking probably fluids and probably getting some calories, but like in the Tour de France, though, they're consuming somewhere in the neighborhood per day near 9,000 calories of caloric consumption from morning, and they race midday, you know, not in first thing in the morning. I know they do. I mean, it's just like, there is no snacking. It is borderline an eating disorder problem, but it's not, I mean, because once they're in season, they just need to come in, but most of them come in heavy, and that's what they use the early season races for, is riding or racing into shape. But nowadays you can't, it just starts off so fast. You have to come in hot. You have to come in ready to roll, or you're just, again, part of the peloton.
Joe was actually a pretty good interviewer. He was asking him, you know, you started in 95 doing these drugs, and yet you went through cancer after the fact, and you kept taking drugs.
Right.
Why would you do that to yourself when you're on the death's doorstep, and you're still putting these other substances in your body? He said, hey, I'm competitive.
Right.
Cycling was life and death.
Right.
Beating this cancer was a competition. It's me against you.
Right. Everything
and that,
is.
And that was, it just spoke to what his mind frame was, and he just had to win at all costs.
Well, and supposedly his ban is, I don't want to say coming up, but ultimately I think he can race coming up here soon in events that don't, I read the whole outline of it, but basically that don't have a world championship or national level, basically a non, you know, qualify for this or knocking people out to qualify for, so he can literally now start doing races, but will never be able to race it, you know, in Kona or at, you know, ITU World Championships or
cycling national. So.
However, this is interesting though, and I think it was clarified that it is considered by WADA or USADA or USA Triathlon, I don't know, that Ironman World Championships, is it a world championship? Because it's really not. It's a series championship. It's not a world championship. It's, you don't qualify as a country to race there. You don't race for your country. You, matter of fact, if Germany was really good and they showed up to every single Ironman that had qualifying slots and they took every single one of the slots available, it would still be the Ironman World Championship.
Oh, it's all Germans were racing.
And it was just German. Well, you look at it right now. How many of the field is U.S.? It's huge. How many come from, you know, Ethiopia? Mm-hmm. You know, how many come from, you know, I don't know, any other place, Russia? Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the whole point, is like, well, if that's the case, if he can't do a world championship, is Ironman World Championships a world championship? Mm-hmm. And I think it was determined it was, because it's recognized as, but it's not. Oh. It's a series championship.
Yep. Yep. Check it out. It's a Joe Rogan Experience on iTunes, or just look it up on, I think it's 737. Might be the, yep, it is 737. The name of the episode.
Oh, Joe Rogan Experience 730. He, yeah. By the way, he admitted to doing, injecting weekly with steroids. Joe Rogan did. I just saw a YouTube clip that that's the title. I'm just reading the title. It says
he. Oh, I'm not surprised. If you look at him 10, 15 years ago, the guy is just a normal looking guy. And then his head got big. His arms got big. He trained as UFC. You don't get big like that as an adult, man.
Right. Right.
The older you get, you don't get
bigger. I'm in my prime at 42.
No way. Not at all. I've been around too many bodybuilders and know differently.
Right, yeah. So it's interesting. I think that's what he's coming back to do. And I think that's what people have said from the very start, that Lance Armstrong needed to come back and apologize for how he treated people and be sincere and honest about it. And I think that's what you're seeing right now, is this campaign of going, that he is sounding more honest about how he treated people. That was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I think he used that as an example on an interview I heard, was saying, if someone came home, you know, if my son came home and there's a kid that treated him like I treated people, you know, I would be at that school, or if, you know, or I would tell him to kick his butt. You know, basically, that's not tolerable. So it was, I forget how he worded it, but it was basically just saying, I would never tolerate a person like me. So, you know, why should anyone else?
Yeah. All right. With that, we're going to wrap up this episode 151 of the podcast. We got a lot of great topics still to come here in the coming weeks. We've got some great guests, coaches. We've got a chiropractor who talks with us on a regular basis, coaches with different specialties, whether it's cycling, swimming, overall triathlon. And I think you're really going to enjoy this. You've seen them, you've heard them in the past, so they're going to be coming up on future episodes as well, as we continue to talk to them throughout the season. And if you have a guest that you think could add value to our shows, to our audience, please let us know. We communicate a lot through Facebook, or send us an email directly, endurancehour@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. That'd be great. So with that, Roger, any final thoughts or motivational phrases to leave our friends and family with?
You know, no, we're in the early throes of our season here. You know, we still got snow. Trying to make it fun. Who knows what's going to happen to our winter? Hopefully, it's mild. Maybe we could do an episode on that. How to take advantage of winter weather. And there's a lot of people out there
stuck indoors.
How do you get out? How do you maximize what you have indoors? What's important? What's not? What's just, you know, a waste of time? You know, I'm going to ride 7 hours on the trainer. Nah, that's a waste of time. That's a real waste of time.
Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Everyone, thanks very much for listening. Have a great week of training. I'm sure you're training right now. Very few races here at the end of January. But until next time, for Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson. Adios. Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come, brother, baby.